Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I'm Nikki B here, joined today with my guest, Luke Tatum. How are we doing today, Luke?
Hey, I'm great, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Well, me and Luke have been friends for a number of years, and if there's anyone I was more excited to get out there and write a book and get themselves published, Luke is top of my list. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and the book you chose to release?
Sure. Well, like I said, my name is Luke Tatum. I started a company called Perfect Spiral Capital. It's a financial firm, all things considered, but it's a somewhat non-standard approach to the world of finance. And the book is an expression of some of those ideas. It's kind of a consolidation of the way that I work with my clients. And so the book is called Between the Lies, How to Reclaim Your Future from the Banks and Wall Street. So a little bit of a provocative title there, but it was, you know, it's intended to kind of shake people out of some of the ways that they have been interacting with money in their lives and in the world, and some of the understandings that have been offered to them that are not really correct. The first section of the book is called Lies and Half-Truths. Gets into a lot of problems that are out there, and a lot of just lies and half-truths, right? Things that we think that we know and aren't really true. And then part two is kind of what to do about that in light of the things that you've learned in part one, you know, or maybe you already knew, depending on kind of where you're at. What do you do about that? Because there is a solution, or there are solutions. It's just not what people are telling you to do.
Nice. So, I mean, I can, the next question I'll ask, even though just listening to how you describe the book and what I know of the world out there, it seems like it's the only option. But why did you decide to DIY this book and release it yourself as opposed to like looking for a publisher and doing the traditional route?
Sure, sure. Well, I like to do things the hard way if you want just like the short, funny answer. But, you know, I don't have any inroads with a publisher. You know, I'm not connected to anybody at one of the big publishing houses. My mother has been writing like fiction books and wanted to get published for a long time. And she's not, as of this recording, she's not a published author herself, you know? And so the self-publishing route is very compelling, especially in the modern era, because you have resources like Amazon out there that have pretty smooth on-ramps to, you know, getting started. It's a process. You got to learn their tools and everything, but that is, you know, a way to get in front of millions of people potentially. And it's not like I'm the only one doing it, of course, right? There are, from what I understand, 7,500 new books out on Kindle every single day. And that number keeps getting bigger. And so it's less about, you know, having a plan to write the book and things like that. And it's more about how do you actually get people to read it? How you get any traction in an environment where there are over 12 million books on Kindle right now, probably 13, you know, if I were to guess by this time. Mm-hmm. So that is, to answer your question, I guess, directly, I did it because I didn't see another option. Like, I'm not a fan of being told how to do things. And, you know, I know that you kind of get your marching orders from a publishing house. If you were, even if I submitted a manuscript to multiple places and I got an agent and I had all of the right things happen because the book was just that compelling, like, then I still have to market it. I still have to do a bunch of it myself. And, you know, the point of the book is not to make money on the book, but it's still like you're going to get nothing from a traditional publishing route. The rate of royalty is quite low and you're still doing all the work. So I thought, I'll just give it a shot. And then, you know, it's my property. I'm not giving away any rights. And I can sort of adapt.
I'm curious, you know, since your book purports to have hidden knowledge and, you know, alternative viewpoints, even if you thought you could get that in front of a publisher, what do you think the likelihood they're just going to be like, another one of those crazy people?
Right, right.
Get that out of here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's probably exactly what would happen. I honestly didn't think about that up front. But I mean, going the self-publishing route was part of the decision to do a book in the first place. You know, I didn't write a book and then say, okay, how do I publish it? It was, okay, I had talked to someone who does consulting work and helps people self-publish. And she seemed very interested in what I was doing and said, mm-hmm. I should probably write a book. I said, well, I hadn't thought about that really. I mean, I've sort of been putting some ideas together. I've been writing tens of thousands of words for my blog, but hadn't thought about doing a book yet. And yeah, I stewed on that for a month or so. I said, okay, I'll write a book. That sounds like a good idea. And here we are.
What were the biggest pitfalls or struggles that you encountered while you were, you know, going through this process, especially as a first timer?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's getting out of your own head, I think, is one of the biggest things, because you, at least I, anyway, have a tendency to want to put everything in there. I have perfectionist tendencies and all that. And so there was a temptation to write a 900-page book and never finish it in all likelihood, and, you know, just consume all of my time and resources and energy in doing this. And then by the time it's done, I hate it and all of these things. So I really struggled with just saying, you know what is the absolute minimum amount of necessary information, kind of applying like an Occam's razor type principle to this. And just like, I'm very into ideas like economics and all of those things, as you know, because we know each other, but that's not what every single person needs to get their financial life in order, yeah. Right? You don't need to hand them 12 books on complex econ theory in order for them to be able to manage their household budget. That's just not what it is.
And as a friend, I know you're a big science fiction fan like I am. And naturally, the books that we read, like a 600-page book, is a short book.
Right, right.
So you're immediately looking at like, oh, I put out a couple hundred pages, and that's the preamble to the story, you know. Let's get to the meat of this.
Right, right. One of my favorite books is A Deepness in the Sky by Werner Vinge, good sci-fi book. And that book really starts pretty slow. Like, there was a moment in there pretty early on, you know, a 100 or so pages in, where I'm like, I don't know if this is really picking up. And I'm not sure if I want to keep going, because it's a pretty long book. But that is one of my top three. Man, it's one of my top three favorite books that I have ever read.
It's still on my list.
Yeah, you got to read it, man. You got to read it. But like, there's just so much setup. And one of the things I'll tell people is, like, in a story, video game, book, anything, and even music, because I like prog and really long songs and stuff. You know, I'll pay any exposition price for a good payoff. You know, like, I'll wait and I'll consume all your stuff that you've written if I get a cool result from that. If it never picks up, like, okay. But and so with that tendency in mind, like, that's my natural thing. I would love to do this magnum opus, like, multi-volume treatise. And I just had to be like, nope, not necessary. And just cut and just cut, mm-hmm. cut. So that was tricky, because I like writing. I've always liked writing, you know? And so it's like, everyone will want to read everything that I want to write. And that's just not true. So you have to be a marketer when you write, at least nonfiction anyway. You've got to mm-hmm. make it compelling and interesting and move so people will want to finish it.
I'm curious, is there an approach you took to the writing that helped you to make it, I guess, more palatable, considering we're talking, in your case, economics? It's a very dry category.
Well, you know, I just tried to get to the end of the manuscript. Like, that was my first objective, right? So I just, as far as making it interesting, I guess that really doesn't answer your question, but I just tried to say, okay, let's, you know, I'm going to write today and I'm not going to edit. I naturally kind of edit while I'm going, but I was like, all right, cool. I got a chapter done. Okay, cool. I got another chapter done. And the chapters are short. And that also helped me to be like, okay, I'm making progress. It's not mm-hmm. a 90-page chapter. It is like two pages. So just keep on making progress, keep on making progress. And it was longer than it ended up being, you know, so I did cut chapters out even after that process. I went back and added a couple. The consultant that I ended up working with suggested I add a chapter on what occurred in 2020 because that's very relevant and brought a lot of like emotional context in. But honestly, it was other people that were giving me feedback because I changed the title multiple times and, like I say, traded in content in and out a few times. And so it was other people saying, hey, this would really add some weight here if you, instead of saying, you know, some vague general example, which is how I'm prone to write, maybe make that concrete, tell a story here, you know, something like that. So I really had a lot of help. And if I'm going to give advice, being a rookie writer, you know, that I am, I would say, like, that's a great thing. Get it in front of people who care about your success and who care about what you're trying to write about. And they probably have better ideas than you.
Well, and that's kind of my next question is, like, so what kind of help is there out there for people trying to self-publish? You've mentioned a couple times you got a consultant that you were working with.
Right, right. So that's a relationship I happened into. We ended up talking to each other on a Facebook Messenger call before I even knew that's what she did. And she's, you know, was interested in what I was working on, some of my projects. And so we hit it off. Turns out she helps people self-publish. And so that I fell into that. But you could easily seek that out. If you're already of the mind that I want to write a book, great. Yeah, you can search for that. There's, you know, wonderful search engines, right? But the knowledge and experience that she brought to that was to say, okay, this is how we're going to market the book. This is the, you know, we're going to try to get into a category on Amazon that is not totally dominated by similar books where you can't get any traction. You know, a few reviews will help you get off the ground as opposed to you need 30,000 reviews to be competitive, that sort of thing.
And that actually kind of, so how has your book done? And I'm asking this because of what you're saying there definitely factors into some of the first questions I had when we were talking about your numbers back when you were first getting ranked on Amazon.
Right. I mean, so ultimately, end of the day, like my book is a personal finance book because it's about how you can implement things in your life to improve your own financial reality. But if I had entered the personal finance category on Amazon, well, okay, that would, I don't know that I would have ever broken into the top 100.
I mean, that's probably all Kiyosaki books for this first.
Yeah, it's Kiyosaki, right. Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, you know, there's Gail Van Oxlade, there's names that are a whole lot bigger than mine. I'm not a known author. I'm not a known finance guy.
Well, I mean, how many times has, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad been translated? And I'm sure every one of those translations shows up before you do.
Yeah, and then there's like 8 Rich Dad, Poor Dad books, right? And then
yeah.
They've all been translated. And yeah, so it's kind of bad. But so my book is in the law category because I talk a lot about the legal reasons that things are the way they are, right? So like banking law and what are the impacts of those things. And there's references to all sorts of like law aspects. So my book launched in the law category and it did very, very well. It peaked at number 6 in the law category. It's right now gone down. I haven't actually looked at the numbers today, but it was in the top, at one point, the top 5,000 books on Kindle on Amazon, which is, you know, the most upper echelon that I could imagine because there's 12.5 million books on Kindle. So like that's a fraction of the top fraction of a percent, right? And that's awesome. I did not expect that to happen. But in the category, you know, it was cool because I have all these screenshots saved of like my book is right next to Lord of the Flies on a bestseller list, right? That is a well-known, well-reviewed book. I launched around the same time as all these January 6th report things. So it's funny that we're talking on January 6th, but
I hadn't even thought about it.
that was a thing because there's 3 major reports about the January 6th hearings. And so like they were in the top seller list because of institutions buying them probably. But you know, it's just kind of an interesting thing. Like you never know exactly what's going to be on your competition in the release world. You can look at some of the major publishing houses and see, okay, is something that's directly competing with my book going to launch and it's going to be a big deal because you recognize the name? Like if Kiyosaki was putting out a book on the same day, I wouldn't have picked that day, right? Because you have no chance.
Yeah, but that's the question. Or would that be, there'd be strategy in releasing with the Kiyosaki, as long as you're making it known that this is the book you have to get to hear the other perspective and hopefully maybe ride some coattails. Is that an option out there?
It's possible. I mean, maybe there's some more advanced strategies. One of my other things was, you know, I have a relatively low budget, right?
Like you release the book, Robert Kiyosaki is a dick, on the day he releases his book.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I didn't do that, right? But
you're too much of a nice guy.
Thanks. But who knows, right? And like, people are attracted to controversy and things like that, it seems like. So you could definitely do things like that. That's one of the reasons that I ended up being very happy with the title. It's because it makes you go, hey, this guy's like calling people out. You know, mm-hmm. it's a little bit more of a confrontational take. Like, my position is basically that, you know, banks and Wall Street are both lying to you and you should stop paying attention to that.
I won't say I had any part in that titling.
Yeah. Right. Not that you were involved in any way. So no, but I do want to acknowledge, since the audience doesn't know, right? Like, you totally came up with the name, and it's good, because the name I had before that was not good, and I could not come up with anything.
I'm going to be honest. There was some stiff competition in the people, I think, that you had in your circle of friends that responded to your Facebook poll.
Yeah. How to reclaim your future from the banks and Wall Street. You wanted me to do three things, right? The banks, Wall Street, and something else.
I like circle of threes, but
yeah. And so, you know, there's a little bit of me there. The name Between the Lies came to me as I was driving to go meet up with someone in a different state. So I was in the car for several hours and I was like, I got it, you know, and the title and the cover idea kind of both came to me at once after I had struggled for months and months, basically all year, trying to come up with something that didn't sound lame. I was very happy with that. I don't know. I feel like we're way far afield of your question. I don't even remember what.
No. We're actually getting into what my next question is, which is,
okay,
so what kind of strategies did you employ during the actual release and coming up to it? Like, obviously, everyone, I would say if you could get, pretty much anyone can write a book, some kind of book. I've seen plenty of people do notebooks that take almost nothing, just format some pages and release blanks. And you're okay. I've thought about releasing a couple of those myself. But the big thing is you have to have people set up and ready to buy before it comes out. And you want to reach as many people as possible. And when you don't have, say, like a big publishing house pushing for you and doing all that advertising, what were the strategies that you used to try and get as many people right off the bat? Because that's how bestsellers work, is how many people can you get buying as quickly as possible on that open?
So there's a few things. Number one is I was willing to not make much money on the book, right? So it was Kindle only at first. I actually wanted to release the paperback and Kindle at the same time, but there was some issues with that last minute and I just kind of had to roll with it. So the Kindle is 99 cents, which is the lowest price that you can have for a paid Kindle book. You can release a book for free on Kindle, but you compete separately with free books versus paid mm-hmm. books. I wanted to have a paid book because it looks better competing with some of the more, you know, quote unquote important books that are on Amazon. And so I did that, made it very accessible. Even someone who is struggling financially, if they're looking to not struggle financially, they can probably afford $1, right? Mm-hmm. And so accessibility was a big factor. I spent a lot of my time in the past several years networking with people, building relationships with people. And so I made a Excel spreadsheet, or I use Linux now, so OpenOffice spreadsheet, and put in every single person from my Facebook, every single person from my LinkedIn, every single person from my phone. And I thought through each one of those people individually and said, okay, do I have an actual relationship with this person? You know, how do I contact them? And I kind of built all that out.
The subtext, can I ask favors of these people?
Yep, basically, right? And it's like, hey, I'm going to text them and say, hey, I'm really excited. I'm releasing my book. It's $1. It's on Kindle. Here you go. Like, and some people I approached beforehand, like closer friends, you know, to say, hey, will you buy this when it comes out? Like day one, you know, but for a lot of people it's more casual. It's just like, hey, I'm really excited to get this out there. If you'd like to check it out, I'd really appreciate it. Here's a link. And so just sort of having that ready to go and having the spreadsheet so that you're not like caught up in the moment on launch day of doing something else. You get pulled into some phone call with somebody. It's like, nope, my phone is off. Like I'm well, not off, but silent, right? Mm-hmm. Texting people, Facebook messaging people, LinkedIn messaging people, just going through my list. And it still took me about 3 days to go through all the people that I had lined mm-hmm. up, but kind of knowing what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it, and just making that happen was very important. Right. And so it's the thing I would say to give feedback to a potential author that's listening is have a game plan. I'm not saying that this was the perfect way to do it. Certainly, I could have spent money on ads and I could have done other things.
Oh, I had plenty of criticisms.
Yeah, I'm you know, and I'm all ears, like to hear those things. But my budget was pretty small for this. Mm-hmm. And so, and I had already spent money, you know, working with the consultant and all that. So it's like, look, I'm just going to do it.
Well, I think even more than the, when we talked, more than the finances being tight for you is that your time was tight because you're doing this on top of your day job.
Right.
Like you, the day job doesn't just go away and say, oh, you take your time, buddy. You know, your family still needs a roof over your head. You still got to go out and provide. And so a lot of times, you know, there's things that I would suggest that don't cost anything, but they're going to cost time. You're going to have to go out and set something up. You're going to have to do something. And that you almost seem like you struggled with more during the process of this.
It's true. That's true. I mean, because like I work for myself, you know, this is my company. This is my brand and all of those things. And if I don't work, I don't get paid. It's ultimately a commission role that I'm doing right now. I haven't developed other ways to make money, except now I have this book, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't make me a lot, but and I haven't even gotten a royalty check, right? It takes months before you receive your first royalty check anyway. So that's another mm-hmm. thing to know. It's not like you're going to just make a killing and then suddenly have the money. It's like 3 months later. So but yeah, the financial aspect of that is, okay, if I'm going to dedicate time every single day, every single week, every single month, all year to get this book written, then okay, what does that do to my income? In this case, it lowered my income, right? I mean, it was less money than I could have made, and I 100% know that. So there was a struggle, and you joked about keeping a roof over our heads because like we needed to replace our roof. So that was a thing that kind of cropped up at the end of the year and weren't expecting. It's like, okay, well, I didn't really financially prepare for that, but okay. You know, luckily we...
But a roof's pretty important.
Yeah, it's pretty important. So, you know, we made it work and yeah, things got a little tight, but thankfully I have a supportive wife who wanted to see it happen. And especially once the book was like done, she became very, very excited as well because she's like, this is great. You know, this really pulls in different ideas, is really well written. And she went from a sort of like begrudging acceptance to a like, I'm going to help you promote this. And so that was really nice. But it all worked out. Man, it's just, you've got to prepare for contingencies. Mm-hmm.
If there was anything that you would do differently, what do you think that would be?
Well, I originally wanted this book to release in September. And so I'm not actually sure if it would have been better if I had gotten it out earlier or not. I ended up doing revisions and correcting some things and all of that. So would it have been better to be able to shift my attention back to making my regular income faster, but potentially having less of a good book? Like, you know, I don't know. That's an impossible question to answer. That's something I've thought about. I try not to focus on potential regrets and things like that. But the writing aspect, I will just say, was, and all things considered, I would say it went really, really well. And so I don't have a lot of things that I would say, I should have done this different. I should have done that different. I'm relatively happy with setting aside the time. And, you know, from previous projects, like you and I have worked on some things mm-hmm. in the past. I've gotten better at managing my time for a long scope project. And so it went pretty darn good, man. I might think of something right after we're offline with each other, but I'm satisfied.
Yeah, I guess the big question is, if you were to talk to somebody who's kind of coming up and is interested in doing their own book, what's the biggest thing you could tell them? The thing that's, you know, make or break the success for them.
Right, right. The biggest thing would just be to be realistic with yourself about how much you're going to get done, like, and what your timetable is, because I think you can start a book, and I say this because I've done it. You can start a book and you're like, wow, I wrote 3,000 words today. And then you just go, oh, okay, I can write 3,000 words a day. And so I'm just going to multiply that by a number of days and I'm going to get this book done in, you know, a month and a half or something. And that's just not how it is. The larger your draft becomes, the more you have to grapple with every time anything needs to adjust or change. Uh-huh. And so, you know, if I pull a chapter out, 14 chapters into a book, the first 13 chapters still have to make sense, uh-huh. right? So you have to reread all that material over and over and over. And I joke with people, like, the only book that I really read for most of this year was my own book. I was just staring at it every day. And it's very, very consuming mm-hmm. to do that. And not just time consuming, but like your focus. And I wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh my gosh, I forgot to add this footnote. You know what I'm saying? And so there's a lot of mental stress that goes into that, especially if you have perfectionist type tendencies. So just, you know, be honest with yourself and don't rush into it thinking you're going to knock it out in no time. Unless it's a 60-page book, maybe you can do that in a month and a half, right? But if you're undertaking like a decent sized project, especially fiction or something, it's going to take a lot more time than you think.
All right. So I'm going to have one last question. And this is a special question for you.
Okay.
Just based on what you do, is there ways in which your book could help someone who's interested in self-publishing?
That's a good question. I would say yes, because it helps to get you your, you know, quote unquote, your financial house in order. And you can undertake a project like this in a much more disciplined way if you understand how, you know, your finances actually operate in the context of the broader world. And maybe that's a silly sounding, like, dodgy answer. I don't know, but I think that you really can make concrete improvements to your life with my book. That's why I wrote it. There are other similar books out there that talk about some of the same ideas, but mine, the attempt that was made was to bridge the gap between this is the theory and this is the application. This is a book about actually doing things to change your financial life, and over a longer time frame. It's not tomorrow. It's not a get rich quick thing. It's a, okay, my orientation with the financial world is different now. So what are the consequences of that? Over time, they're enormous. And one of the things that allows you to do is start long-term projects, because you are controlling your financing of, you know, big expenses. So if you're hiring a consultant, if you're sinking money into marketing, if you need to come up with $20,000, you might actually have it. If you've been following the advice here, and you don't have to go beg a bank to fund a $20,000, you know, marketing plan for a book that they don't know anything about and probably don't care.
Yeah.
Because you're not an author. That why would you want to do that? That makes no financial sense to a bank.
It's a terrible business plan.
Exactly. I can have a terrible business plan anytime I want, man. Because I control my financing options, right? Nice. So it's just fun. And I think, yeah, thanks for asking that question. It's a great question.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Luke. I know you're a busy guy these days out there spreading the word of how the banks and, you know, modern finance are screwing people over.
Yep.
But we're glad to have you. Glad the experience has worked out positively for you so far.
Thank you very much. Anyone who wants to check out the book should just pop on over to betweenthelies.com. And I mean, Nick, as always, it's a pleasure. I enjoy chatting with you any day of the week, anytime. Mm-hmm. We can make it happen. So thanks for the opportunity.
Awesome, boss. Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com. And let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.